Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, we are all probably familiar with the Irish Gaeltacht regions, where Irish is the primary language spoken in areas of Ireland. As a teenager, you might have been shipped off to West Kerry or Connemara or Donegal or somewhere else to brush up on your Gaeilge. Well, in recent years, you could have also been sent to Canada. Gaeltacht Tuaisceart an Oileán Uair. God, I hope I have it right. I do, yeah. The North American Gaeltacht, basically, is what we're talking about here. It's based in Erinsville, Ontario, and it's the only officially sanctioned Gaeltacht outside of Ireland. Now, today, being the International Mother Language Day, let's take a look at all of this here and go to Canada, because the Taoiseach of this Gaeltacht, Donal O'Doul, is on the line now to tell us all about it. Welcome to the programme, Donal. You're on the pig's back. Okay. Right. So listen, a Gaeltacht. How did a Gaeltacht end up in Canada?
Well, that's always the question, isn't it? We've got, we always have to remember we have another one, which is more of the traditional appearance of a Gaeltacht, where an area where a Gaelic language has been spoken in an unbroken chain, that's out in Cape Breton. We used to have a fair number of areas like that. Our modern Irish language Gaeltacht in Ontario is quite a different situation than what you would find in Ireland. It is a coming together of the various Irish language groups throughout North America, specifically the ones in kind of the Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto corridor, to make a permanent home for themselves. So it's a new creation. It's something that we're still working on. We're building buildings on the site. We're doing things like this. Our main functions being providing that immersive learning for people. And it really came out of the push of a man called Seamus MacConkerige, or Seamus Craig, who was the son of one of the last native speakers out of his area of Sligo. And when he came to Canada himself, out to Red Deer, Alberta, he realized that there was kind of this lack. There was many, many people who wanted to speak the language, very desperately so, to reclaim their culture and their language, but no immersive abilities and no ability to go to Ireland. So his founding philosophy when doing immersion weekends in Alberta and later in Mississauga outside of Toronto was that if we can't bring people to the Gaeltacht in Ireland, we'll have to bring the Gaeltacht to Canada. And so it was really from that foundation in the early 90s and through the hard work of him and Aralt McGillicanny that eventually through doing immersion weekends, they were able to save enough money to buy a tract of land. And from that tract of land, really have a home, a permanent home base for our community where people will come from across North America, all the way from Texas down in the United States of America through to Vancouver, the Yukon, Newfoundland, even from England or Ireland, people come across. Right. To enjoy the immersive aspect of actually learning how to live your life through Irish rather than just learning how to read poetry from the 1700s, which unfortunately most people in the diaspora are limited to.
Okay, well, we're talking Cumann na Gaeltachta in Kingston in Canada in the mid-90s. That's Seamus MacConkerige. Then you go on to, as you say, 2005 years later, and was it Aralt MacGillicanny? Is that his name? Yeah.
That is him, yeah.
He was the teacher of physics there and etc. And then you go on 6 years later, 2006, Cumann na Gaeltachta gets 60 acres of land and you buy the thingamabob there. And you develop a Gaeltacht, if you like. The opening ceremony then was attended by the Irish ambassador and Helen Gannon from Ceoltacht Cultóirí Éireann. But I did say at the beginning, it's the only officially sanctioned Gaeltacht outside of Ireland. What makes it official?
Well, that's the thing. Because technically, the Irish government wouldn't have the ability to officially designate us. The difference there is official designation versus official recognition. So we can claim that we have some semblance of official recognition because on our opening, we were supported by both the Irish ambassador and Éamon O'Cleave, who at the time was the Irish Minister for Community, Rural and Gaeltacht Affairs, or nearly close to that. And at that time, we are getting congratulations from the high levels of the Irish government, from the high levels of the Irish government dealing specifically with Gaeltacht Affairs, saying congratulations on this effort in establishing the world's first Gaeltacht outside of Ireland.
Well, then outside of Ireland, the Irish language. Okay, Canada is one thing, Ireland is the second thing. Do you know if there are other Gaeltachts around the world that are unofficial but are trying to become an officially registered Gaeltacht or as official as they can be?
There are strong groups around the world. I haven't seen anyone myself that has made that push to buy property and establish a land and a community. A large part of ours is in tying people from across the continent together to be a social community and have a social network. There are strong communities in Australia. There's strong communities in America, but I have not seen any that have come together in this scale or even in the starting points of this scale to come together to build a project in this way. It's fairly unique in the world.
How did you, Donal O'Doul, get involved and then become the new Taoiseach? What's your background?
So my background myself, my father unfortunately didn't have access to the Irish language growing up, and his father had died quite young. And so I was raised more with the mentality that the Irish language is important. It is important for me to learn. To this day, my father remains, that's one of the proudest things he can say about me, is that I'm a fluent speaker. He himself still is not able to speak the Irish language. But I learned my majority at the University of Toronto. So I didn't even learn it going to Ireland. I learned the majority from the University of Toronto from, it's one of the first programs that was established back in the 1970s was this Celtic Studies department with Irish studies. So when I was going through university, it was that I decided I wanted to take on this cultural aspect.
Celtic Studies included the Irish language.
It was a requirement.
If
you wanted to go through for Celtic, and it still stands, if you wanted to do a Celtic Studies degree at the University of Toronto, that you need to take a Celtic language. It can be any Celtic language, but a Celtic language.
If parents
from that program, I very quickly attained a functional fluency, was able to go to the Gaeltacht in Ireland and also become involved in this home group. And I've now been a student and then a teacher and now the Taoiseach for going on 15 years have been part of the organization.
So how far back do you go? I mean, like, where is anybody from? Is it your grandfather or your great-grandfather is from somewhere here?
So my grandfather was the first child born in Canada. All of his other five siblings were born in Ireland. So unfortunately, I can't get my descendants past to come back very easily unless I have a marketable skill. But my grandmother's family, they're from the north of Ireland. They're from Randallstown up near Belfast. All right. And same thing. She was the child that was born on the boat. All of the rest of her family was from Ireland itself.
And how widely spoken was Irish in Canada before the language and the culture was suppressed?
One of the important parts of my research aspect has been kind of countering the narrative from the 1800s. So there was a very specific push to misidentify the language as dying out and going extinct. And then that was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where it was reinforced by the government. But if you peel back the layers on the research, you can see the majority of families who came from Ireland were monolingual speakers up until the famine. And it's a slim majority, but it is still the majority of people who came knew no other language. From there, the rest of that percentage of people coming likely would have had a lot of bilinguals.
Yeah.
And we see that the echoes of that when we are, for the first time on the census, actually asking people, was Irish your mother language, all the way in the early 1900s, all of those families who had maintained it came prior to the famine.
Well,
they
then,
came
hold
in the
on.
1820s,
if I'm
they came in the 1700s.
If I'm talking about the language and the culture being suppressed, are we talking about the fact that about 170 years ago, after the famine, was there a shame and there was, outlawing of the Irish language?
Most definitely there was. So there was already a push to, within the worldwide British Empire, there was a push to kind of suppress the minorities in any country that they were in as an effort to Anglicize the empire for unity. So we see that in New Zealand, we see that in Australia against the Aboriginal Australians, see that in North America very strongly and against the Celtic people. And the expression of that in Canada is difficult because we are settlers on Indigenous land, but we are also disinherited from our own traditions. So in Canada, we had the national school system, just like in Ireland, national school system seeing as being one of the most damaging aspects in the languages of Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, where the language would be literally beaten out of you. And we had unique elements within our cultures, such as the Maidhe Chrochi in Canada, that the hanging tally stick, that were unique expressions of that brutal system in Canada, with it still being in use all the way until the mid to early 1900s with people out in the East Coast. There was also legal repressions that came in against the language and culture. You see this as very strongly as a fear of foreigners. We still have this in North American society. We can see with refugees coming that after the famine, really that was what kind of tanked the language, that up until then people had happily spoken the language and transmitted it onto their children. But with the famine, it was this watershed where it was a shameful, poverty-ridden thing to speak. And then the legal repercussions of things such as the playing of Illan Pipes being illegal in St. John, New Brunswick in 1847, or the playing of the game of Imalniacht, of hurling, being illegal in Quebec City
All those years are gone now, and all those ridiculous carry-on is gone. So how does the Gaeltacht work now in 2021? Is it open all year round? Are there permanent residents there?
So we do have people who own adjacent properties. It is a summer camp. And that's the main difference between the Gaeltacht and Ireland, is we have no permanent population yet. It is a home location base where people from across North America can come together at set times and have an immersive setting. The main goal for us is that basically the way that the Irish language and other minority languages have been taught is a relic of colonialism. If you think about it, we used to have Greek and Latin in our schools. And when Greek and Latin kind of left, that's when they started teaching the Irish language in, like, you know, the moving into the 1880s and things like this. But they were still taught with that colonial mindset of, we will teach you grammar rules, we will teach you how to read poetry, but you don't know how to do the dishes or your laundry in Irish. You have no social network to be able to speak the language. It is an academic exercise to translate documents into the colonizer
language. Well, then, with these immersion weeks, I mean, what kind of people do you get coming there? Are they mainly Americans or Canadians or people with Irish heritage?
So that's exactly the idea. We're providing immersive learning. That's kind of the unique thing that we do, is allow people to come together that they can live their life through the language, which is eye-opening to a lot of people. And the majority of people, we have a split. The people who are coming up through our ranks up into the upper intermediate levels, they tend to be Canadians and Americans, mostly Canadians, because if we're coming together on site, that's how far you can drive. And our upper levels tend to be a strong contingent of people from Ireland who were speakers or native speakers and emigrated in about the 1960s or a little later than that. So we have our elders in our community who are from Ireland, and then we have kind of the built-in backup of teaching people and bringing them up to that level of fluency through the system, depending on those people.
And I presume you rarely have people who are parents that have an Irish-speaking connection. It's probably usually grandparents, is it?
We do. We actually, no, we have some people who are from the Gaeltacht in Ireland and come across, and they want that social network now that they're living in Canada and raising their children through the Irish language. So we do have, we do even have active parents. I myself am raising my daughter through the Irish language here in Canada. For the most part, you have that break between people who have a direct connection to Ireland and people who are looking for more than that typical plastic paddy. You know, I had an ancient Irish chieftain as my great-great-grandfather. Those type of people coming for more realistic and actual cultural exposure in their own culture.
Well, I assume that your winter course, Fail in the Schnock, that was done, which was done during the week, I presume it was via Zoom. So how did that go?
So this is the second event we've held online. It was really an opportunity for us because we have been limited to our site. And now that we've been forced to go online, we realize how many more services we can provide again across North America. So we had 50 spots open for students, and 50 spots were entirely filled. Our summer course had 75, so there's lots of interest. And the level of enthusiasm and talks we had from people were very interesting. We had how to make Boxty through the Irish language. We had talks from the Moray Institute of Languages on immersive learning and how to change our outlook of how we learn languages, and even courses in poetry, stick fighting, things like this, channel singing. So really a strong cultural contingent, with the majority being around the Irish language. And I think it went really well. I think people had lots of fun.
Okay, and when the pandemic ends and real people will be really there, well, just I hope it goes very well indeed. Listen, Taoiseach of Gaeltacht Tuaiscearth an Éilean Uair, the only officially recognised Gaeltacht outside of Ireland, Donal O'Doul. Donal, thanks very much. Or Gura Míle Maith for being with us on the programme today. Thanks a million,
Donal. Gura Míle Maith. Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.